9:27 now. Let me welcome our guest this morning, and who joins us live in studio, Maeve Delargy. Welcome, Maeve.
Thank you, Ryan.
Lovely to meet you, and thanks for being with us this morning. What I'd like to do is go to first year in secondary school when you were about, what's first year? Is that 13, 14?
Yeah, even a bit younger, yeah.
Thereabouts. Yeah. And as it's a very formative time in your life in school, yeah. And you met Shifra.
I did.
Tell me about her and school and just the broadly going through the secondary school system together.
Sure. Yeah. So we were put in the same class in secondary school in first year, and we kind of recognised each other straight away in the sense of, oh, that's someone new and interesting. And definite interest levels there already, and we became friends really quickly and stayed friends all the way up through secondary school. We did lots, spent so much time together and did lots of things together, you know, completely just as friends, you know, and with no pressure from anyone, you know, on, oh, you guys are spending, you know, to do, like, is there anything going on there? And no, we were just allowed to develop our relationship and
as pals.
Exactly.
It's a very sweet, a very ordinary thing, but lovely, profound thing too.
Yeah, we definitely just got to know each other slowly. And at the end of our 6 years, we both moved on to college, and our relationship at that point in second year college also moved on. So we kind of transitioned from a friendship into a romantic relationship then, and we haven't looked back since.
Great. Because there had been fellas involved before as you were kind of navigating life, I presume.
Yeah, probably more for Shifra than for me. I didn't have much luck. I was trying to get a Deb's date unsuccessfully and things like that.
Happens to the best of
exactly,
us.
Exactly. I was very fixated on it, I suppose, because that's what life told you, you know, find a guy, and you know, it seems very obvious from the media who you should be looking for and stuff. So I knew all the criteria, and if I did ever come across them, you know, I thought, oh yeah, okay, I'm really interested in this, and nothing ever happened. And so when we got together, it kind of made sense of a whole lot of things that had gone before. It was like, oh, this wasn't really meant to be. I was never meant to have a boyfriend. I was, you know, that wasn't my path.
And second year in college.
Yeah.
That must have been quite the conversation. You know, the moment of catharsis or realization.
Yeah. Well, in some ways, I was so lucky that it happened with her, in the sense that we both kind of realized we should be more than just friends. It wasn't a hint from our friend. It was just, she said, to be with someone for your whole life, you have to be able to talk to them endlessly. You guys are the only people that had never run out of things to say to each other. And that was a click. It was like, whoa, maybe we have something more here than a friendship. And it was both discovered then. We hadn't really thought about being gay before. We hadn't realized it. And so that made it easier for ourselves to be like, okay, we're doing this together. And also easier telling people then, was because people are happy to hear you're in a relationship. So the coming out process was made easier by saying the news is we're in a relationship, rather than the news is I'm gay as a solitary thing. That's hard.
It just, as you're talking, I'm thinking about the Shiv from Succession, who I was just reading about earlier on, who was best friends with this guy for years. Mm. And then they were going out with people, they're going out. And then the pandemic, they ended up, she would move in, whatever. And they got married, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny how sometimes a friendship can be, like, I'm always curious as to know, when does it emerge from the under layers and emerge up and say, actually, do you know what? This is more than platonic, obviously.
Yeah. No, I'm so glad it did. Yeah. You know, I could imagine it going through a whole life and not having realised that. It took a long time, and they're obviously looking back, so many signs that was always there. But maybe no societal pressure, no pressure from ourselves. Just kind of naturally realised it.
And you got married?
We did. We got married. Thank you. Yeah. The November 2019, a really great celebration.
Oh, just inside there.
Exactly,
good timing. Just inside
the
zone.
But
okay.
Yeah. We had
a few months in time. Yeah.
Exactly.
A big Irish wedding.
Yeah. So loads of friends and family there. It was brilliant. And sure, little did we know, it was, one of the last
tracks.
One.
Okay.
Exactly.
So you got married, and then I suppose the crux of why we're here today, talk is you decided you wanted to have a child.
Yeah.
And can I ask you then about the process and the thought process there? Did you think about what were you thinking in terms of options?
Yeah. Well, I suppose, you know, we knew we wanted to have a child way before we got married, like really from very early on. That was something that we knew we both wanted.
Great.
And again, lucky, I suppose, that both people were on the same page with that. And so we'd been exploring. We knew that it was going to take time for us and potentially be a bit more difficult than for others. So we started exploring this and looking into options, as you say, from very early on. We thought about it a lot as well, had a lot of conversations with each other about how we wanted this to look, you know, what was the best thing for our child and all of that. So we looked into sperm banks, particularly the European Sperm Bank, and kind of felt that wasn't for us in our situation.
Can I ask why?
Yeah, I suppose it was we wanted to be able to tell any future children, answer any questions they may have about their donor. You know, so we wanted to know their donor. And we felt that going through a sperm bank for us didn't give enough information, that if they had questions about what did he like doing, or, you know, we'd hit a dead end. And we know, for us, even the complications of having a known donor, for us, were worth it to be able to answer any potential questions.
So you did it. It was very much selflessly for you, the child, not for yourselves in some ways.
I suppose for us, we're lucky that there has been no complications and we don't expect any complications. Yeah. But yeah, there is that risk that we took on for our
child. So you ruled that out. The sperm bank was, any other options you thought about? Like, was surrogacy on the agenda? Was adoption on the agenda or anything like that?
Yeah, like all of those, I suppose, we would have looked into if we had to. But the first preference was to have biological children ourselves, and we had no reason to believe we wouldn't be able to conceive with a bit of help, obviously. Yeah. But, you know, so we didn't think about surrogacy at that point, and we, you know, adoption, let's look at that down the road if necessary. But we'd love to have our own children biologically.
So, and again, forgive me if you feel I'm prying, and don't answer if you don't have to. But I'm just curious, when you're sitting down with Chief Ray and you think, okay, we'd like to go with somebody, maybe somebody we know.
Yeah.
How do you light upon that person? Because, you know, well, tell me about your nodding, because obviously that was quite the conversation. I mean, how does that work?
Oh, yeah, it's a really weird one, because I suppose if you fall in love with someone that can kind of give you children, that's sorted. It's like, well, it's you. You're the one that I'm going to get sperm from. But for us, it was kind of a weirdly different process. It was more, you know, you're kind of thinking, well, if we had to choose someone, you know, especially in the sperm bank situation, you're thinking, right, well, I have to put down some criteria here to get back the results. So I guess tall, you know, so it's very strange.
Yeah.
But really, luckily for us, Shifra has a very, very good friend that she's known for years. And he actually offered, he knew we were looking into this. He knew we wanted to start a family, and he offered to be our donor. So we were so, so fortunate with that. And it kind of took out a lot of stress.
So would he be a friend of yours then?
Yeah.
I mean, you said she's Shifra's friend. He is, but also a friend of yours by proxy.
Absolutely, yeah. We've all known each other for so long now.
For a long time. Mm. And again, a peculiar question, but clearly he met the criteria that you...
The main thing was that he was a friend and we knew him. Yeah,
I thought you were going to say the main thing was he was tall, because you mentioned that.
No, he is a fantastic person.
Okay.
And in fairness, like, if you were picking him on a chart, you'd probably pick him anyway.
Is
but
that
the
right?
Really, the main thing is that we know him so well, you know, and he was willing to do this for us. He offered, and he... we know about him, you know, so any questions we'll be able to say, oh, your donor liked to do this, or oh, maybe you got that from your donor, so that's the important bit. And having that, you know, I've said it could be complicated, and knowing him as a friend, knowing who he is, takes out that risk, because we know he's a solid person and we can rely on him.
The nature nurture thing you just alluded to there would be intriguing. So if your child starts developing characteristics that you know belong to your friend, like he might be a little bit antsy going to fly in a plane or whatever, that'd be intriguing.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll, because you know, you're, and Shifra particularly knows the father, the donor.
Yeah.
You'll be able to go, that's so like,
I know.
Is that strange for you too?
Yeah, I'm really trying to get my things in there to make sure. Yeah. That's me.
That's definitely mine. Okay. And in terms of the relationship between the donor and, because that, I feel this is kind of quite layered in some ways, because you have the donor who also happens to be your friend and the baby. And what's the nature of relationships there particularly in terms of the child?
Yeah. So he, as I've said, is our good friend.
Yeah.
He has been for so long. We expect to be friends with him for the same amount of time again, and of course, much, much longer. So he will be in our lives as our friend, and she'll get to know him that way. And we will tell her as soon as she can understand and at the level she can understand that he is her donor. So
will
she
you?
Always know, yep, that yeah. we don't want to have to do a big reveal at some point where it's a shock to her or news.
Yeah.
We just want it to be part of her life. And we'll then let them decide in the future what relationship they have.
Okay, so when your daughter is of an age,
mm.
you'll say, look, here's the deal. Yeah, obviously we're your parents,
yeah.
but this is, and the biology of it, if you like.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me ask you then about the law, because this is something that you're a lawyer, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
You're a barrister, and so you know the law more than most. But with that in mind, where are you on the birth certificate for your daughter and maybe future children?
Yeah. So I'm a solicitor. Just
solicitor,
in case
excuse me, my mistake.
Yeah,
my error completely. My apologies.
So I have a birth certificate, or we have a birth certificate, or more importantly, our daughter has her birth certificate with both of our names on it. But we had to go to the north to get that. In the UK, the law is different to here. The UK allows two women, if they're married, no matter the method of conception, to be the two named parents on the birth certificate. So we have that, but it did involve a transfer of care from Hollis Street, where Shifu was getting brilliant care, up to Belfast. Thankfully, that was smooth, and both hospitals made it very smooth. But she was 39 weeks pregnant and we were packing up the car to go to the north. So it wasn't ideal. But again, it was one of those situations where we thought this is more important to have that document because it's something we cannot get in Ireland.
Why?
Because of our chosen method of conception, because of the way we went about starting our family that we truly believe is best for our family. We decided to use a known donor, as I've said, and we also decided to conceive in a non-clinical setting, i.e. not using a fertility clinic. So for those two reasons, we were already out of the system. We weren't going to get that birth certificate. And so we then decided to go to the north, as I've said, to get that,
yes.
which is another criteria for people. You have to give birth in the state. And there'd be lots of people who, for unplanned or planned reasons, would give birth outside the state. They could, you know, they could have done everything else right, as they say,
yes,
and
yes.
followed, ticked all the boxes, and for just a happenstance reason, give birth outside the state. And again, their child has no birth certificate and therefore no legally recognised parental relationship with both of their parents.
I want to talk to you about that as well, Maeve, but
yeah.
Before I do that, are you suggesting, and does the law suggest that the UK is ahead of the curve in regard to our conversation this morning, or are we slow to evolve?
I suppose feeling? You know, we do have our own laws, and your listeners may have heard that in March, I think it was this year, a lesbian couple from Cork were the first same-sex female couple in Ireland to have both of their names on the birth cert. So, you know, there is the option there, but it's very limited. It's limited circumstances. It's restricted. And whereas I suppose the UK have gone with if you're married, you make your own decisions and we'll respect that model. So I'm not saying that Ireland has nothing,
yes.
But it's different and it leaves a lot of children out.
And that's where you want to get things changed, I presume.
Exactly.
And how close would you say you are to that, or how far are you from that, if you could ask?
I know. That's a really important question, because the rights I've just mentioned that have recently changed were actually drafted and enacted in 2015,
yes.
and only commenced in 2020. And at the stage we're at now, the possibility of this area changing is with the Assisted Human Reproduction Bill, which is currently priority legislation on the legislative programme for autumn.
Mm.
But that, you know, that it's at heads of bill stage. We've no actual drafting yet. We've no enactment. And we've certainly no commencement. So when these laws will actually change could be a long time down the road. And what we need the bill to do is to legislate for children that are born through surrogacy, both at home and abroad, and legislate for all those children that are currently left out of this 2015 Act that I mentioned. So it's people that who were born abroad, people who used a known donor in the past. Going forward, you can use a known donor, you know, after this 4th of May 2020 mm-hmm. is the crucial date for conception. They have to have gone through a fertility clinic in Ireland. So all of those people now need to be included, all of those families and children.
Where do you lose out vis-a-vis your daughter and any future children in a given situation?
Yeah.
I think the one that keeps coming to mind is medical emergencies. But
that's it.
Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I suppose just to also, before we get into the practical implications, yes, say that this is an emotional impact as well. You know, we've been together for 13 years now, me and my wife. We wished for this daughter together. We planned for her. We hoped for her. We waited for her. And since she's been born, we've been jointly caring for her. So I am her parent. And to not be seen as that in the eyes of the state does hurt. But talking about the practical implications then, as you said, like, she's due for her 12-month vaccines now this week, and I won't be able to bring her. I haven't been able to bring her to any of those appointments because I can't consent. As you said, that
you can't sign a piece of paper.
No, I'm a legal stranger to her. It wouldn't mean anything.
Gosh, okay.
And then, as you said, the medical thing, if she was out of the country, medical emergency with our daughter, I wouldn't be able to consent to potentially life-saving treatment for her. I wouldn't have that ability. And then the other thing is inheritance down the line. Again, I'm a legal stranger, no legally recognised relationship. And so any inheritance I'd give her is treated as third-party inheritance. And, you know, the tax benefits that every other child gets with their parents, the tax relief, yeah, just doesn't apply here.
Yeah, that sounds like, I mean, if we were to walk a mile in your shoes for a second and imagine suddenly all your legal rights and associations with your children were, as you say so well, to make you a legal stranger in the system, that's not pretty and it's not easy.
No, definitely not. And I suppose, you know, working in the law myself, I know how important legal protection is. So not having that then is kind of feels especially important. And I know that this is, you know, crucial to have legally recognised relationships. You know, socially, everyone sees me as her mum. My colleagues see her as her mum. You know, not the issue. Like, Ireland's great. The people are great. Yeah. You know, I haven't encountered any problems there. But I suppose the problem is you're worried if someone did decide to say, you know, no, I don't want you in this room, you're not her parent. No, I don't want you signing that form, you're not her parent. They would be legally correct.
Fully entitled to.
Yeah, exactly.
And the reason Shifra is allowed to do all of this is because
she gave birth to her. And so she is her automatic parent, automatic guardianship rights. That's how it works.
How do you ask a question like this? But is there any news?
Yeah.
Well, this is the great dad question of our time, but go on anyway.
The news is that I'm also pregnant.
Congratulations.
Now. Thank you so much. Yeah.
That's big news.
It is. It's big news, especially in a house where there's already a nearly 1-year-old
running
around.
Good luck with that, Maeve.
Maybe we'll rethink, but you can't do that. You are where you are. So, delighted. I'm giving birth in all going well in January, due in January. So, been feeling good. But the reality is that nothing will change.
Does this flip the legal status in strangeness in terms of Seaford now becomes the stranger in your child, you're giving your birth to life? Is that what's
happening? Exactly.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, let me ask you then, again, another deeply personal question, which you can choose to ignore, which is, how did you decide who was going to carry the baby?
Oh, yeah.
Am I allowed to ask that?
Sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Well,
Shifra knew she definitely wanted to. So that was, you know, she was first up, you know.
Did she?
First day. Oh, yeah.
So it's just
forever.
The squeaky wheel gets the oil, is that it?
Yeah, maybe. And then she had, you know, she just thought it was so wonderful being pregnant and giving birth. And she was like, I want that for you. I don't want you to miss out on that. You know, have a think about it. Do you want it? And I said, yeah, I'll go next. So we're sharing there. And it means then we do get to have a family with kids, you know, ridiculously close in age. So.
Well, that was a very loving decision all round then.
Yeah,
so that sounds like about right. Niamh was on to say this story really impacts our children's lives. We have two girls born in Ireland within a same-sex legally recognised relationship, but only one of us is on the birth cert. It's cruel and it's unnecessary and it needs to change.
Yeah.
So that's an agreement there. Anya says, would the donor have more legal rights than Maeve in the Irish legal system?
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, he would be seen as the father here.
Is that right?
Yeah. So that I suppose that's why we decided to get this birth certificate from the North. It's not recognised here. It doesn't change anything here. You know, but if necessary, the three parties could live in the UK, me, my wife and the donor, and all for the roles we all want to have in this child's life, we could all be legally protected for those roles.
Okay. Are you hopeful?
Yes, you have to be hopeful.
You have to be hopeful, exactly. But are you hopeful? To fight the obligation.
Yes, yeah. Well, there's been a lot of work done by a lot of people on this. There's a special report, you know, on the rights of the child that recommends exactly what we need here. And so all the government need to do is take those recommendations of their expert on board as they're drafting the legislation.
Well, wouldn't it be great if something moved in the right direction?
Absolutely.
Maeve, it's been lovely to meet you, and thanks for coming in today, and to you and Shifra and to the burgeoning family, every happiness to you all. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
All right, it's 13 minutes to 10.